Hello everyone, Neil Patel here. Thank you for downloading the latest episode of the Indian Startup Show. Today is a best of. But first, big news. I am starting a production company creating Indian-based dramas, documentaries and animation shows. And I will package them up for multicultural audiences around the world. It's really exciting. So if you're a writer, scriptwriter, producer, animator, or know someone who is, or has an original and interesting story to tell, please pitch me your concepts. Get in touch. hello@neilpatel.co and let's turn this into the next big Netflix and Amazon Prime show. It doesn't have to be Indian, but please get in touch. hello@neilpatel.co. Thank you. On with the show.
My dad has been, so supportive in this entire thing. I still know he's a road tripper at heart. Yeah. Although he hasn't taken his car out in a while now, he's kind of old and he's gone into teaching now.
Okay.
But I know my dad, has a good sleep every day knowing that I'm doing what, he wanted me to do. He was the one who shoved me in the car when I was that young. Mm-hmm. And I decided not to get out of the car after that. So. One year, 2 months to get our first customer. I mean, pretty much that period. I still remember the date. I mean, like, it was 14th February. I never got any. I was never successful in love that
That's
way.
That's Valentine's Day, I think.
Yeah, exactly, Valentine's Day. And I got a proposal from the company
on
that
day. Yeah, you didn't get a rose, you got a contract.
Yeah, I got a contract, not roses. So that was good fun. I mean, I remember that day very much.
Honestly speaking, most of our corporates just ask for that to lighten up mood, not knowing the benefit.
Yeah,
but
okay.
Yeah, whenever they ask us for a desk yoga session or a corporate yoga session, then can you guys throw in a little bit of a laughter session too? Just for everyone laughs and they're all happy, that's why they ask for it.
So, today you will hear from Ganesh Shankar. He's the co-founder of FluxGen, talks about solving India's water shortage crisis. Next up is Vineet Rajan. He's the co-founder of Scout My Trip, talks about building India's premier do-it-yourself platform for road trips. And finally, Matthew Brown. He's the CEO of Calcutta Yoga Club. He talks about bringing yoga to the masses. So sit back and enjoy some of the best moments. Thank you.
Hello, Ganesh. Thank you for coming on the Indian Startup Show today.
Thank you very much, Neil, for inviting me to this podcast.
Excellent. Please tell the listeners what you're building.
So we are an energy and water management systems company. Mm-hmm. We use the concept of Internet of Things, artificial intelligence, machine learning to make this efficient for the customers to save their water and energy. So that's our product.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And where did you get the idea from? How did this all start?
So I used to work with General Electric, GE, I realized that I was not contributing much from what I had gained. And most of my education was actually public funded in India. So I thought I should do something for something in India. Mm-hmm. And I moved to a village it's called Ujjiri, somewhere near Mangalore in South India, mm-hmm. to understand how electrification happens in rural areas. Mm-hmm. And during that time, I realized that solar power is actually the most prominent places where there's no grid.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that solar had become fairly unpopular because of the technology. It is not, people are not able to differentiate where it was something, things were going wrong in solar, and they're just blaming it on the solar panels. Then I realized that you should probably measure each parameter in a solar system, mm-hmm. and understand where what is going on wrong. And I realized the problem was not actually with the solar panels, but the overall system. So I realized that monitoring plays a very important role, mm-hmm. in actually building new forms of energy generation. I mean, help making it popular and fixing the issues with this thing. So that's how we got into, I started this company called FluxGen Engineering in the year end of 2011, mm-hmm. and wanted to focus on monitoring this solar plants. Mm-hmm. During this process, most of the plants were very far, so we wanted to put this data over internet, and then we started putting all the solar data into the internet, and we realized that it would help in monitoring anywhere in the world. So that's how we actually got into Internet of Things. We didn't know that what we were doing called Internet of Things, but we realized it was actually Internet of Things. And during this process, we also realized that it's as much as you generate electricity, if you can actually save energy, it is much better than actually generating more. So we actually started doing the measurement of energy consumption as well, apart from energy generation.
Mm-hmm.
Realized that the amount of water consumed actually plays a very significant role in energy consumption. Mm-hmm. If you can save water, you can actually save energy. Mm-hmm. So in this, with this, we actually started connecting the water flow meters and water level also. This helped us understand that maximum share of energy goes in water pumping. And that's how we actually came up with our product, Energy and Water Manager, mm-hmm. which can save your water if you can first measure it and get some kind of a prescriptive alerts on saving it.
Mm-hmm. And how's it going so far? Can you share some stats, perhaps?
So it's been excellent in terms of journey, mm-hmm. But it's been a kind of up and down in terms of facing entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. I mean, I call it excellent because I love troubles. I love challenges. I think that's what makes it exciting to be an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And we've been last year, I mean, in terms of we made about one crore revenue last year. Mm-hmm. And we are doing good. We are hoping to make a better revenue this year and in future. Mm-hmm. And I think initially it was very tough. I mean, you don't know where to start. I mean, I didn't really start this journey with a business plan. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is something, the most stupid thing to do right now if I had to start a company. But back then I was just kind of excited to just start off on my own, and I didn't really have much plans. But the journey has taught me many things. I mean, probably that's what probably I can share in mm-hmm. this Please podcast. Do, yeah. What's the pain area that you are solving of a customer should be very clear when you start a company. Mm-hmm. And what's the value of that pain, and how solving that would either make you profitable or solve a social issue, social problem. And I would probably say if your intentions are good, I think somehow everything will work out fine. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. You said you like troubles and challenges. If you can give me some examples then.
Starting with actually, we didn't really have any kind of technology backing or any kind of technology that you want to work. Mm-hmm. So I was like kind of very not sure how to start off. And so we were trying various tools, and that was one of the challenges at the start. And to build a team itself was a big challenge because you are zero and you are yourself not have much of a plan ahead. Mm-hmm. So how to get people on board to get to work with you? So that was again challenging at the start. But when once we have clarity on what we are doing, what problem we are solving, it was much easier to get people on board and help them understand how solving this problem is going to benefit the society and also this learning. I mean, something learning in this field would enhance their own growth. Mm-hmm. I think finances also was a big issue. In fact, I started this company with my provident fund savings from my job in General Electric. Okay. I mean, 2011 September, it was not like this startup era of India had not really started up. So I just saved on money from my job and I started it. And so finance has as well, I mean, I think finance, problem in finance is not a negative thing. It's an advantage because you become more creative and you actually come up with new ideas when you are actually in this kind of financial thing. So you want to develop something that makes more valuable case for your product. Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you to get your first customer?
Oh, it took nearly 1 year, 2 months to get our first customer. I mean, pretty much that period. I still remember the date. I mean, like, it was 14th February. I never got any... I was never successful in love that
That's
way.
That's Valentine's Day, I think.
Yeah, exactly, Valentine's Day. And I got a proposal from the company
on
that.
Proposal, yeah. You didn't get a rose, you got a contract.
Hey, I got a contract, not roses. So that was good fun. I mean, I remember that day very much. It took nearly 1 year, 2 months to get the first thing.
Is that what you expected, though, that it would take this long to get your first customer?
I was actually kind of prepared for it, and I knew that I didn't have that entrepreneurial thing in my genes. So I come from a family of teachers, so I thought it's going to be hard. So I was prepared for it, and I was actually glad when I got that.
Mm-hmm. Moving forward then, moving forward, what is the like the aims and objectives, say, over the next 24 months? Where do you want to be?
See, I think the aim is to make sure that how precisely we can identify energy and water wastage from our IoT systems. So that would involve machine learning applied to artificial intelligence. I think that would be one of our very important focus area. So mostly on the platform play. I mean, I want to make the whole system more of a platform play rather than hardware driven. And we want to acquire, get customers who consume water energy excessively, like paper manufacturing companies and many of this chemical factories and various other firms which actually consume a lot of energy and water to for their processes, which helps them save their income in input cost. So I want to try to involve other components which help, I mean, which actually increases energy consumption. Perhaps like heating of water is another important component, and probably temperature inside various areas that also contributes to energy consumption. So we want to add, see what are the other components which consume. So we want to monitor that and help in saving energy and water to our customers.
It seems quite busy. How do you keep on top of things then?
So I think I should credit most of the work that we do to my team. I think I've got an amazing team who are actually kind of curious, and they are kind of really, they're just not doing the work that is probably given. They are actually evolving on their own to realize that there's so much of thing happening, and we have regular conversation, and they work in like a family. So I would say my contribution to the company is just around probably 5%, 95% of work is done by my team. So I think the most important thing that I would say is my team is thinking. So that's helping me grow. So I think that's what I want to make sure that always happens in the company. The DNA of the company is like, you're not just giving low work. It should be like the company thinks on its own to make things happen.
What's your management style then? Is it like hands off then, I assume?
So my management style is very simple. When I go to my colleagues, I ask them, you focus on the work, I'll focus on your career.
Okay.
So that has worked fine to me. And I truly think, if I have to tell you, that I started the company mainly to make a great work environment. And I always thought my colleagues should be really successful. I mean, the most successful people in this world. So so I always focus on my people, I think. And they actually focus on the work. So if any progress has been done in their work, I think I should credit on that focus. So that's been my management focus. I focus on people, and people focus on the work.
How would you compare the management style at GE to the one at FluxGen then? The same or different?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think that more core values of GE was imagination at work, and I really value that. Has helped me actually imagine a lot. But I think as the company is like a nearly 100-year-old company, so I would say it's one of the fantastic company too. I think that 2 years of my job in GE helped me almost like learn what I could learn in an MBA school. But I guess I must probably, I was not at the top of this one or something like that. So I didn't get that care for people that what I wanted. So my expectations were high in terms of what the people in the company should get. So I would say GE is a very customer-driven company, and in terms of Lux, and I always wanted to make it employee-centric company. I mean, completely make sure that. So I don't know how it pays in terms of profit and loss, but at least I count the happiness of my people above all. So I don't know if it is right to compare the management style of GE, but yes, I think with respect to FluxGen, it is about people first.
What were the reactions of your friends and family when you told them you were quitting GE to start up this business?
You'd probably laugh at it. My mother told me, who would marry you? I mean, like, entrepreneurship is like, at least in 2010, actually, is like, was considered like a forbidden path in middle class family. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you would be able to connect to it. I mean, so my mom was really upset. But my father was very happy that that I always had this kind of crazy dreams and projects in my mind, dream projects in my mind. And he's always seen me successful. And he's seen me overcome failures. So my father was very happy, though he didn't explicitly express it. So some of my relatives were like my uncles were really disappointed that I probably took the decision in haste. But in fact, they are the one who actually supported me all these years. So I must say, like, I'm very thankful to especially two of my uncles, mm-hmm. Dr. Gopal and Chandru Timmappaya. Mm-hmm. So one is my dad's younger brother and one is my mom's elder brother. So they actually came in board as board of directors to my company. Mm-hmm. And they have supported me all this while to actually grow this business and gave me very sound advice and being very critical about my actions, which helped me take right decision when I'm actually going in wrong. So I must say the family has been a strength.
Mm-hmm. Actually, do you think anyone can be an entrepreneur then?
I think, everybody are entrepreneurs in their own way. Mm-hmm. Because entrepreneurship for me is like coming with new way of doing things, which is not prevalent. I mean, there's a big difference between a businessman and an entrepreneur. A businessman probably adopts existing business model. An entrepreneur comes up with a new business model, which... So I think everybody are entrepreneurs in their own way, but it's what level of risk-taking they bring in their life. Actually, probably call them a mainstream entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. So I think anybody could probably be an entrepreneur if you call with the mainstream terminology, that if you call me Ganesh Shankar as an entrepreneur. So I would say yes, of course. But at the same time, I would say there's no really probably thing that. The entrepreneurs alone make a dent. I mean, like probably Robert. I mean, Einstein was not an entrepreneur, but his contribution mm-hmm. has helped so many entrepreneurs make great things. Mm-hmm. So we should always keep in mind that yes, the entrepreneurs actually take things that are developed, but others, the people who actually develop some things, may not have been entrepreneur in the mainstream mm-hmm. terminology.
Excellent. Okay, so you've had quite an interesting entrepreneurial journey. Has anything surprised you about your entrepreneurial journey so far?
Probably made me realize is that I met some really wonderful minds during this process. I think entrepreneurship network that I actually built actually become from the good friends, and I have been able to do a lot of other adventures. Unlike just I've been able to do a lot of cycle rides mm-hmm. during this process with these friends. So I would say entrepreneurship just opened up my whole friends network in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I mean the kind of internship that we offer in our company has helped us actually make things from. I mean, build things from people who are just so raw, but with great imagination. So this has been a great learning as far as whole journey is concerned. So that's what I would say. The whole purpose, I think, has now become turned out to the learning. I've learned many new things, and the possibility of learning that would happen in the future, I don't know, it's just boundless. So mm-hmm. that's what I think has been the an experience that I would say is fantastic. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the future. What is the future of Indian startups then? Is it still booming, or is a few going to fail in your view?
So I think it's like the startup ecosystem in India is going to just grow like anything. Mm-hmm. I would say it has probably just started mm-hmm. now. So I mean, like, as you said, I mean, anybody could be an entrepreneur. The question that you would have asked me like 20 years back, if I was of this age, I would have said probably no directly. So it requires only sums. But considering that it has become more possible, so I think recently one of the chief minister of a major state in Karnataka said, an entrepreneur in every family.
Mm-hmm.
Is what is their vision for the state. So I think it's going to grow like anything. And creativity-wise, I think Indians are grown up in an environment where they have got some cultural advantage
mm-hmm.
in terms of this one history and the mythology that we study. I somehow feel there's a cultural advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the kind of thinking Indians probably go through with great epics like Mahabharata, Ramayana, actually gives them a lot of insight about the philosophy at a very high level.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually opens up them to actually achieve greater and greater things. I think there's a great scope for the cultural advantage in to be more with more fortitude to have and courage, which are very important aspect in entrepreneurship, like for risk taking that you say. So and the kind of ecosystem that we have that the great software leaders built in 90s
mm-hmm.
is going to play a very important role in actually building innovative products. And I would say the future of tech is somewhere lying around artificial intelligence and machine learning analytics, which are centered around software and the cloud. So considering the fact India made big leads in 90s and 2000, so we'll probably catch up on that, especially in the tech space. And also in terms of maker movement is happening in India like anything.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of makers are building. So fabrication, making products is also going to be much easier than before.
Mm-hmm.
So even the government initiatives in terms of Make in India and Startup India are also going to play a very crucial role in making products from India. I mean, that probably we would see a lot in the future. So that badge, like Made in India, you would probably see a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definite advantage that Indians have because of the population as well. So, and considering the fact, like a lot of engineers graduate from India, I think maximum in the world, if my stats are not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, many part of the segment of engineers would actually take up entrepreneurship in tech. So, just like, a really, really great scope for India to become one of the startup centers for the world.
Last few questions then. What should first-time founders be focusing on, in your opinion?
I think they should be focusing on the problem statement, mm-hmm. what problem they're solving. And they should focus, also make sure that they spend little at the early stage.
Mm-hmm.
And really be conscious on what they're spending on. And they should focus on a team,
mm-hmm.
Right kind of people into the, like, they should have complementary skill set. Mm-hmm. I think these are the three things that's on top of my head.
Mm-hmm. And what's like the main quality that an entrepreneur should have?
Patience. Mm-hmm. I think that's, if I have to say three important qualities, patience. I think that's what counts because it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take a long time
mm-hmm.
and they should have that kind of thing. It's all going to work out fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned cycling before. I believe you went on some sort of cycling adventure.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think cycling has played a very important role in building this whole patience in my life. Mm-hmm. So after coming back from leaving my job in General Electric and coming back to Bangalore, I wanted to build an inspiration for my own self. Mm-hmm. I have always been inspired by people. I thought I should do something inspire me for next 10 years or so. So I started doing this long distance cycle rides. Like we did the cycle ride from Bangalore to Goa, which is around 600 kilometers. Mm-hmm. That journey was just amazing in terms of the kind of people we met, mm-hmm. kind of experiences that we had, like a lot of cycle punctures and mm-hmm. failing. So all this thing actually helped us to actually overcome a lot of difficulties, which built a mental strength. And after doing that cycle ride, I thought if I could do this cycle ride, I could probably do anything in this world. So that has acted as an inspiration to me so far in my entrepreneurial journey. So I think adventure has played a very important role. I've done so many cycle rides in this 5-6 years, around probably 20,000 kilometers cumulative. Mm-hmm. So
on the same bike
every time. yeah, the cycle, yes. So I feel this cycle rides has acted as some kind of a sheet anchor role in my career so far. So yeah, I think if you have some kind of an adventure or some kind of hobby or like music, something that you want to play or you want to do, it acts like a good companion when you're going through a stressful career as an entrepreneur.
Hello, Vineet. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Hi, Neil. A pleasure to be here talking to you on your podcast.
Yeah, please tell the listeners what you're building.
We are building Scout My Trip. Mm-hmm. We are India's first end-to-end road trip community platform. We are about road trips, like the name mentions. Mm-hmm. And we're about scouting your road trips better. What it essentially allows you to do is, before you hit the road, you're able to chart out your entire route very effectively by figuring out where you want to take halts, where you want to fill your fuel, which are the possible restrooms you can use, which are neat and clean, which restaurants you can eat in, which may offer a cuisine of your choice, mm-hmm. Which roads are better, which roads are more scenic. And we power this entire thing through a community of users who are giving it information all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's not just routing what typically a Google Map kind of app will do. It's much more than that. And it's like it says, it's all about road trips.
Mm-hmm. Sounds fun. How did you come up with the idea?
So interesting story. So me and my co-founder Deepak, we've done a lot of road trips together. We rode the iconic Royal Enfield. We still have those bikes and we take them out for a spin, the drop of a hat. And when we, started working on Scout My Trip, the intention was kind of selfish because we wanted to make our road trips better. Mm-hmm. And the more we actually dwelled into it and we started, realizing that there is a huge need for something like this. Mm-hmm. So, it started off as something as a personal project, a passion project, but we realized that this is far bigger than just the two of us. Mm-hmm. And that's when we actually got really involved in sizing the industry. And we figured that this is easily a $16 billion market in India alone. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even looking at markets like US in this sizing. Mm-hmm. So if I include US and Europe, we are talking of $100 billion easily. Mm-hmm. For leisure road trips. Mm-hmm. So this was a big market for us. And that's when we decided to quit what we were doing back then, mm-hmm. and get into Scout My Trip and build this platform. Mm-hmm. And we haven't regretted that decision at all. I mean, when we started Scout My Trip, we had between the two of us done 500,000 kilometers, mm-hmm. on our bikes. And now we are actually gunning towards 1 million kilometers with the entire team put together, mm-hmm. Because everyone in the team is a traveler, is a road tripper. So the more we speak to travelers, the more we speak to other communities, other biking forums, we realize that we are actually hitting the nail on its head, making people road trip better.
Mm-hmm. How's it going so far? Can you share some stats?
Sure. To begin, we incorporated in April 2016. Mm-hmm. And before we launched a product, we had done something called an insider access. Mm-hmm. And this was just for people to apply to see what it's about. Mm-hmm. Just for the insider access without a product, we got over 5,000 people to sign up.
Okay.
And that was that was an eye-opener because we realized, hey, this is something people really, actual consumers needed. It's not just our immediate circles.
Mm-hmm.
That was, a good this thing for us. When we launched in December 2016 and till now, we have had over 35,000 people who have joined our platform, joined our community.
Mm.
2018, February, we became operationally profitable.
Mm-hmm.
So we are actually... In a growth phase at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty quick considering that travel is a hugely competitive space in India.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of dominated by online travel agents like Make My Trip and Clear Trip.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a good story for us in terms of growth. And a bit of a help came along our way in April 2017 mm. when Z Nation Lab, which is a Silicon Valley-based accelerator, mm. Invested in us. And that's again, really helped us in our growth story.
Why do you think they invested in you? There's obviously a lot of companies try and get investment.
Yes. I think one of the reasons why they kind of invested was because me and Deepak have a lot of... experience when it comes to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they just saw that we are converting our passion into something that's going to really help other travelers.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever, we kind of speak to anybody about travel, about road trips, 9 out of 10 times they come back and saying, just talking to you gives us goosebumps. Because we're able to romanticize the road, mm-hmm. road so well that they kind of actually get lost in that story that we tell them
mm-hmm.
about Scout My Trip.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the truth. I mean, Deepak and I met on the highway,
mm-hmm.
On the road.
Literally on the highway.
Literally on the highway, yeah. So, and this is not the first time we're working together. So we have actually been part of a lot of biking groups, a lot of travel groups in the past. And we've had the opportunity of even running a biking club in Bombay.
Okay.
So we have had experience of working in the past. We have a long history. I mean, we have known each other's bikes longer than we have known each other's wives.
Okay.
So I think the biggest reason is probably the team, because that's what an investor looks in. Because a good idea, mm-hmm. Can even that can be replicated. But I feel a team is very hard to replicate, especially the founding team.
How did the platform change then during your time at the accelerator? And how did you feel about it?
Yeah, I think the kind of mentorship we got from Z Nation Labs was very instrumental for us to even pivot at the right times.
Okay.
When we started off, we were kind of a forked version of Google Maps.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, with their guidance, kind of evolved to such an extent that right now we are even looking at, we are actively looking at becoming the Uber for travel experts.
Okay.
So when I say we are planning to become the Uber for travel experts, is there are a lot of individual people across India, and I'm not referring to travel agents.
Mm-hmm.
These are individual people who have their own circle of, people who could be, say, a taxi operator, who could be a hotel provider or a resort or a homestay. People in their ecosystem. We are bringing these people onto Scout My Trip. And when somebody comes to us saying that they want to go to a very remote corner or any place for that matter in India, it's this travel expert who actually does the entire fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening is through Scout My Trip as a platform, we are enabling that individual travel expert to monetize his expertise, his local connections,
mm-hmm.
And look at it as a means, way for him to earn a livelihood, which has been hugely successful thanks to the kind of guidance we got from our accelerator.
Mm-hmm. What would you say is the key takeaway then from the accelerator?
I think the key takeaway for any accelerator program is the network you're immediately part of.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I think, the biggest takeaway. It's not the money. It's purely the connections and the mentorship that they give you. So I think that way their involvement has been very high. And they've been very supportive in terms of what we do. And I think they kind of understood our vision of what we want to do, why we want to do, things this way. Because a lot of times what happens is when you talk of a community, typically it is associated with, smaller sizes, smaller numbers. Mm-hmm. The way we have worked with Scoutmetrip is that the community is not the be-all and end-all. I could be a traveler and I just want to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I could still use the platform without actually joining the community.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows, a non-involved traveler, if I may use that word, to also use the services. But if somebody really wants to go deep in, he can always access the community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of working for us because the word of mouth we have seen for Scoutmetrip in the last, 2 years has been phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Because all these people are just coming together and they're just taking us the distance.
Mm-hmm. So how are you getting customers to your platform then? Is it email or social media? What's working for you?
Glad you asked that, actually. So there are two key drivers in terms of how people are finding us. One is search. And I've always believed in the power of search engines. So we focus a lot on creating content which actual travelers will use or actually see our blog. It's full of information about making road trips better. And these are all written by us or by our team.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of knowledge we bring in from our expertise as well. That is the one place where we see the highest continuous increase in terms of traffic to Scoutmetrip. The second thing that we have done very effectively is leveraging influencer networks.
Mm-hmm.
So we work with a lot of travel bloggers in India, and they have actually really, really added a lot of user content on the web, which points back to us.
Mm-hmm.
So these two put together have actually really propelled us from, just being another travel startup to a travel startup people can really find information about if they're just searching for routes. In India, we're on top of the charts when you search for road trips, when you search for, road trip planners.
Mm.
So that way we are right on top. And, thankfully because of that, we haven't really invested much on paid advertising.
Mm-hmm.
As much as other travel startups would do.
Cool. Well, let's talk about road trips then. What was your first ever road trip then? Where did you go?
My first, first ever road trip was when I was a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
I was 5 years old. And my dad woke me up and he just shoved me into his car.
Okay. Sounds scary.
I mean, my dad always, had that streak, he'll wake up one day and he'll decide it's time to go somewhere. And, in one of those trips is when I learned how to drive. I was 18 years old and my dad decided we need to go for a road trip. He woke me up in his usual way at 5:30 in the morning and he said, Vineet, let's go. We're hitting the road. And that's when I learned how to drive. I'd not even got my license.
Mm.
A word of advisory, don't drive without a license. But since I've brought it up, so I learned to drive the car on a road trip, which went on for 8 days.
Mm.
And we covered close to around 2,000 kilometers. That's over, 1,500 miles. We covered that much distance over 8 days. And that was one of the most memorable road trips I had. We stayed in bed and breakfast on the highways,
mm-hmm.
Wherever we went. And that's probably one road trip that I'll never forget.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I learned how to drive.
Mm-hmm. What are the popular destinations then for road trips in India?
Yeah, in India, I think the most iconic road trip is a road trip to Ladakh.
Mm-hmm.
The government has also been actively trying to improve tourism there. They're building better roads. They're building tunnels, which actually cut through the mountains. And they're very, very harsh mountains, in terms of weather and road conditions. So that is one of the most iconic road trips, I feel. But for somebody who's really looking to go offbeat, Northeast is again a place which is really for those crazy adventure seekers. That's a destination that people are really looking at now. And there have been a lot of activities in the Northeast, like the Zero Music Festival, the Hornbill Festival, which is actively promoting tourists from all over India and not just India, actually all over the world, to come down to those states. And all these places are accessible only by road trips. So, you know, if and then, of course, you know, you have those iconic places like the Bombay Goa Highway, you know, which is something that everybody wants to do. You have the Kanyakumari to Kashmir, which is close to around 2,500-3,000 kilometers. And it's one road which takes you right from the tip of the country to right to the top of the country. These are some iconic road trips that, you know, everybody dreams of doing. But having said that, you know, it's not just these long distances. You know, when studies were done and when we also studied the market, we realized that 60% of all trips today are road trips.
Okay.
That's a huge number. And most of them are weekend getaways.
Yeah.
Weekend getaways in a, you know, in a 100 to 300 odd kilometers, a place you can go, relax, chill out, see a couple of things and have a good time and come back.
Sounds good.
Those are the places, those are the new markets which are actually very big in terms of number.
Any tips for first-time road trippers?
Yeah, I mean, so here is where, you know, I'm not even saying that. What I'm saying is, for a first-time road tripper, he or she should have access to a community which can guide him better. That could be any community. I'm not saying you need to use ScoutMyTrip as a community. But for any first-timer, they should have access to others who can advise them on the things they should do and not do. That's very important. The other thing is they also need to understand their limitations. As an individual, you'll have both physical and mental limits. So one thing we advise is never drive beyond 8 hours in a day for a first timer. The 8 is like the upper limit. Never drive in the night. So these are simple things, but you know, there is such a long list, which is why I said they should ideally connect to a community which can help them better. And for that reason, you know, since you bring it up, Neil, we started an offline community as well called the Road Trippers Club. And Road Trippers Club is essentially for people, you know, who want to hit the roads but want to hit the road in the safety of numbers. So the Road Trippers Club, you know, we started off with the Mumbai chapter since we're kind of based here. And we do trips, 2 to 3 overnight trips every month. So just about every weekend we're actually on the road. With a bunch of 10 to 15 families, pets, kids, all hitting the road together. And they're all kind of very safe, saying that, you know, there are other people to look after me. And if there is anything that happens, they're there to take care of me. And they get to learn a lot in terms of how do you negotiate a curve? How do you brake your vehicle using just the engine and not your brake? You know, simple things like this that every road tripper needs to know. So that is something that we're evolving, you know, as we go. There are other things also that, you know, we have been working on from a traveler perspective. Like the government of India introduced something called a DigiLocker. DigiLocker essentially is a way for you to get access to your documents digitally. It's not just uploading a scanned document, but using the DigiLocker, you have immediate access to your license. To your vehicle registration papers. And these are, in a couple of states have already have started accepting them as a valid document. We recently integrated with the DigiLocker, so, and making us the first, India's first private travel company to do that. So that was a big achievement for us because we realized that even the big guys hadn't haven't done it. So, and when we started doing this, it was an eye-opener. A number of people have actually joined us after we integrated with DigiLocker has been great. And all of them are first-time users. Here again, you know, we bring them back into the community in terms of really advising them how they should plan their road trips better.
So it seems everything's going well. Is there anything you worry about? Anything, any things that keep you up at night?
Yes, you know, every startup has its, you know, ups and downs. And some of the things that keep me up at night are, you know, when I go back to thinking if I could have done something better, you know, and I think that is good and bad in a way, because it can't be something that drives you all the time. Because if you keep looking at the past and things that didn't work, it also does not allow you to look into the future. You know, since you bring it up, one of the mistakes that we did, and I would advise every founder not to do this, is if you are building a technology startup, never ever outsource it. And that was a cardinal mistake we did. We had outsourced our technology, being a travel technology startup. And that really, really hampered our growth in terms of how quickly we were able to address consumer demands.
What excites you most about doing this startup?
I think just the fact that I'm able to do something I've been so passionate about. And it inspires me to just talk to other travelers, because there's so much that I learn from them. And I feel that ScoutMyTrip has given me that, opportunity to connect with so many other travelers, which I would not have probably been able to had I just been part of biking clubs. Because now I'm talking to people who want to travel with their pets, who want to travel with their kids, who want to buy bigger cars, or who might want to buy a smaller car. So there is this entire, varied set of people I'm able to interact to. And that's really opening up, the way I look at the world today.
What does your dad think about this then? Because obviously he took you on your first trip at five years old.
My dad has been, so supportive in this entire thing. I still know he's a road tripper at heart. Yeah. Although he hasn't taken his car out in a while now, he's kind of old. And he's gone into teaching now.
Okay.
But I know my dad, has a good sleep every day, knowing that I'm doing what, he... wanted me to do. He was the one who shoved me in the car when I was that young. And I decided not to get out of the car after that. So, so I'm sure he's very happy. And the fact that, we became operationally profitable a couple of months back, any parent kind of worries about what their kid does. But my parents have been very supportive. I have a very supportive family, my wife, who have been there through everything that, the choices we made. And I can only thank all of them for this.
What qualities do you think are required to be an entrepreneur? What main quality do you think is needed?
Yeah, so, I feel that there has to be some risk-taking ability. Appetite. A lot of my friends also, they always were like, I want to make some money right now so I can save up and then I start something. I feel that is the biggest trap a would-be entrepreneur can ever get into, because there is never a right time. It has to be a conscious decision that I want to do something now. And that's what I did even with my first venture. That was kind of when I was still in college. And we all started this venture called Indie Blogger, which is the largest network of Indian bloggers. The decision was simple. We need to do this. That was the end of it. Because a lot of times what happens is that you have an idea and you never see it through. And you can never do it, because what happens is every stage of life, you keep evolving, You first will buy a house. And that's typically a problem in the Indian society. Everyone is pressured to buy a house, buy a car, get married. Once you get into that life cycle of yours, it becomes very hard to actually take a risky decision. So without waiting, one has to take a decision saying, I need to do this. That's the first thing that I feel every entrepreneur should keep in mind. You have an idea, go out and do it. Because 9 out of 10 times, things do fall in place if you're just very, very diligent and you're smart about it. I know startups fail all the time. But if you're smart about it, if you take a decision to follow through it, I'm sure things will succeed. So, you just need to keep your ears and eyes open. That's the first thing I would advise anybody who wants to become an entrepreneur.
When's your next road trip then?
My next road trip is, as soon as, okay, so as part of the Road Trippers Club.
It's Sunday, right? So get any bike.
Yeah. A road trip is as simple as kickstarting my bike and just hitting the road. But there are three or four road trips that I'm going for the coming weeks. Every weekend I'm actually out.
Oh, nice.
There's even a night photography I'm planning to do mid of next month. And we're going to a forest reserve with my wife. That's for her birthday.
Okay.
That's also a road trip. So there is quite a few road trips planned. Thankfully, I'm in a job which allows me to continue doing these road trips.
And what is it about the Royal Enfield? That's quite a famous bike, right?
Oh, yeah. It is a bike that has really changed me. Mm-hmm. I think a part of Scout My Trip also, I need to owe the existence to the Royal Enfield bike that I own. Mm-hmm. I lovingly call her Leticia.
Leticia, okay, that's a nice name.
That's her name. And she has taken me across the length and breadth of this country. Mm-hmm. Done a lot of kilometers on her. My wife and I, both of us love, you know, hitting the road on it. She hasn't let us down so far. But she does demand a lot of attention. And that's one of the reasons I decided that my bike is actually a girl. Uh-huh. Because she demands so much of attention.
Okay. Needs lots of attention. Okay. So,
but it is a bike that I would recommend to anybody who wants to tour the country. Because it's something that you can fix yourself if you just know how. Mm. There's very little of electronics. There is more of mechanics. And that's one of the reasons why I say you don't own a Royal Enfield. The Royal Enfield owns you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it helps that your co-founder is, you know, a fan of the Enfield bikes as well, right?
Oh, yes. He runs, he owns, or I'd say that the bike which owns him, its name is Thea. That's okay. Again a... So yeah, so you know, it's kind of a joke between us that the people we're actually married to are second wives.
Okay.
Because the first wives are a Royal Enfield. So yeah, it teaches you a lot. I think road tripping has prepared us for an entrepreneurial journey because it has taught us qualities like patience. Mm-hmm. When your bike goes down, when you need to coordinate with so many other people. I think patience is a virtue that road trips have taught us. Mm-hmm. The second thing that it has really, really taught us, you know, for our entrepreneurial journey is teamwork. Mm-hmm. I think none of the road trips that we did with, you know, 50 people, 100 people would have been possible without understanding team dynamics and teamwork. Mm-hmm. And those are things that only road trips will teach you. Mm-hmm. You know, it even teaches you how to really endure a few things so that you can just look at the light at the end of the tunnel. There have been situations where we have actually, for various reasons, have had to ride in, you know, extremely painful conditions just because we really had to go to a safer place. Mm. And I feel that, you know, road trips is a beautiful way to not just discover yourself as an individual, but to discover yourself in terms of an entrepreneurship potential. Mm-hmm. As a leadership, as a leader, what is it in you that can really inspire others? And I can only thank the two wheels that I kind of ride for teaching me those qualities.
Mm-hmm. What would this business look like in like 5 years' time then, or 5 to 10 years' time then, in your opinion?
I feel, right now also in the space of road trips, along with Scout My Trip, there are a few other ventures which are doing this. Mm. And that's a very good sign because more people are now showing interest. We're growing the category as a whole. Of road trips, telling people that they need to hit the road more often in a car or on a bike rather than just flying somewhere. In 5 years' time, I see that this entire ecosystem there's going to be some consolidation. Mm-hmm. because already vehicle manufacturers have started putting devices, consoles in the car which allow people to actually plan a trip better.
Yeah.
Not just routing. That is one. The second thing is, in terms of enabling a lot of elements on the highway. For example, your petrol pumps are there. There are roadside eateries are there. Restaurants are there. I think a bit of consolidation is going to happen in this space in the next 5 years, where all of these can actually become part of an ecosystem for road trips. And it could be sitting straight out of your own car or your bike. I think that has been our movement also as Scout My Trip to work in that direction. So in one line, we say that we want to be part of a road trip from your dashboard to a restaurant. But having said that, this market, I do personally feel it's up for a boom. While the travel space is growing at more than 8 to 9% year on year, this has been an evergreen industry. I don't think travel at any point of time has really suffered because of a recession.
Mm.
People are still traveling. They're finding cheaper ways to travel. And I feel road trips can actually address that space because if you're able to really plan this better, optimize your trips better, it can actually be a very cheap affair.
Yeah. So I reckon you've been to most places in India.
Yeah.
Is there any places left?
Yes, there is actually. There are a couple of trips I still want to do. One is I want to ride from the east easternmost part of India called Kibitu, which is in Arunachal Pradesh.
Mm-hmm.
It's right at the China border.
Okay.
And I want to ride up to the westernmost point of India, which is Koteshwar,
wow.
which is in Gujarat, which overlooks Pakistan on the other side. So that is one trip I want to do on my bike.
How long will that
take? That should probably take around a month.
Wow.
Actually, if you want to do this without really putting too much stress on the bike or yourself. But you can do it in a lesser time. But I don't want to do that because I think that defeats the purpose of a road trip. Because then you're doing it just for the destination. I feel road trips are about the journey, not the destination. That is one trip I'm really looking forward to, if you ask me.
Actually, do you have any business heroes? Or people you admire?
I actually do. You know, I admire Bill Gates. And I remember when I was this again, you know, my dad at work, he bought me Bill Gates' book,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I devoured it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the stuff he wrote in his book, The Road Ahead, and how you know things have actually the stuff that he spoke about, how they've actually come true, you know, speaks so much about a man who has that vision. And I really do look up to him in terms of all that he's done in this space. I know he's not a person who's into travel, but as a business leader, I think for me, he's right on top.
Cool. And how did you meet your co-founder again?
I was actually riding my bike on the western coast of India,
mm-hmm.
and my bike had broken down, and Deepak happened to be riding with a few of his buddies.
Okay.
And I had parked my bike on the side, and he's like, "Hey, what's the issue?" I said, "My bike isn't really working, so that's kind of my problem right now." So, and he kind of helped out, and then I continued my journey with the rest of his gang, and we decided to stay in touch. A couple of years down the line, we kind of became part of the founding team of a biking club,
mm.
and we got involved there, and we ran the show for a few years.
Mm.
And then we started, that's when we really got access to a lot of other biking clubs, a lot of other travelers, and kind of expanded our immediate community and immediate reach as well, our circle.
What?
So that's how we met. And, you know, talking of Deepak, he's been in the corporate space for a very long time. He was a payments professional before he got into ScoutMyTrip.
Yeah.
He was the director for Verifone, which is one of the largest payment organizations in the world. He's the director for Indian operations. So he left everything at a very, very prime position in his mm-hmm. life, and he got into ScoutMyTrip. That also kind of, you know, reiterated the fact that if he could do it at that stage of his life, definitely there's something more to this.
What was it like when you told everyone you were quitting your job to do this business?
See, for me, actually, it wasn't a big transition because my first venture was also, you know, I was always in the startup phase. So for me, it was absolutely nothing new. It was, in a way, I was in my comfort zone where there is no comfort because with startups, things are very dynamic. You never know what's going to happen next. There are a lot of constraints you work under. So for me, it was nothing new. But for, I think, Deepak, he took it head on.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he has actually learned, along the way as in a startup, applied what he learned in his corporate life. I think that, again, gave a lot of confidence to our investors and whoever we speak to. Just because of his corporate experience of running very, very large organizations. I mean, in Verifone, his immediate reporting team was close to around 100 people.
Mm.
And he was managing a business worth quite a few million dollars in India alone. So that's all experience that's kind of, you know, helping us at this point.
Do you think anyone can be an entrepreneur then? It seems everyone's doing a startup in India.
In a way that is true, and it's also good. But, you know, my beef with this thing of everyone calling themselves an entrepreneur is how they define their startup.
Mm.
A lot of people actually start businesses. And when I say businesses, it could be a shop or it could be a service that they're rendering, and they call themselves an entrepreneur of a startup. I feel startup is an organization that you create which adds some very unique value which is probably not being done by others. That is how I would define an entrepreneur and a startup. Now, if you look at it through that lens, it's actually not that everybody is an entrepreneur or claims to be an entrepreneur. Maybe that's not true. But I think with the push that the government is doing, and I think with the overall environment here in terms of creating a business and being able to, you know, quickly start your venture is all good. It's the normal cycle. There'll be a lot of startups that will come up. A few will survive. They will thrive. And the rest of it will either get acquired or weeded out. It's all good, because I think the more people who start ventures, businesses, startups, we have more jobs we're creating.
Definitely.
And I think that's how we need to really look at it. I also feel that anybody can be an entrepreneur if they have the right frame of mind. Even when I say the right frame of mind, they need to essentially know a bit about how to run a business. You can't spend 10 bucks and earn only 5. That is the first thing that, you know, I feel every entrepreneur should know. And the present startup environment in India is not allowing entrepreneurs to raise too much of money without really, you know, giving a statement of their expenses and accounts. Mm-hmm. So that's something that investors have also learned over the past few years, based on some mistakes that have happened. So investors are asking for statement of accounts of every penny that's spent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one good thing that's happening. So entrepreneurs are also very careful of how they spend their money.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of spending investor money on discounts, they're spending money on how to acquire more customers smartly, which is where I think this entire this thing of growth hacking is really, really picked up.
Mm-hmm.
More and more people are trying to hack ways of growth where they're spending less money, getting the most bang for the buck. So having a decent, you know, business acumen is very important if you want to become a successful entrepreneur. The second thing, like I said, you need to have a risk-taking appetite. If you don't have a risk-taking appetite, I don't think anybody can survive in the startup world. Because if you're always in the safe zone, it is better to start a business wherein you are looking for customers, you earn some money, you save that money, and you go out of this thing. You continue your life like that. Startups can't work like that, because a lot of times there are people, you know, who are looking up to you, could be your employees, could be your investors. There are a lot of other stakeholders involved here.
Hello, Matthew. Thank you for coming on the Indian Startup Show today.
Hi, Neil. Thank you so much for having me.
Excellent. If you tell the listeners what you're building.
So I work at the Kolkata Yoga Club.
Yep.
And we're a wellness at home service provider. We have services like yoga, physiotherapy, massage. We've also partnered with a company called MedLife that delivers medicines so that we could even provide that to our customers.
Excellent. And how did you get this started?
About 4 years ago, I worked for a startup.
Mm-hmm.
I was a part of the founding team there. And we're a preventive wellness company, was that?
Yeah.
And we thought of new ideas to make a little money that time, because the whole idea of preventive wellness in India wasn't working out. People over here have, you know, they believe in when something would happen, we'd take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
and not preventive wellness. So we had to make money elsewhere. And that's when we thought of yoga and physiotherapy, and it was new in the market. And we thought, why don't we send this to a customer's house and let's see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
However, the founder then and me did not see eye to eye, because he thought this was just a stopgap solution to making money, while I thought this was a good idea.
Mm.
And that's where we separated, and I thought of the Kolkata Yoga Club. And this is where it brought me.
Yeah.
We're successful right now.
Right. How's it going so far then?
Oh, very well. The first 3 months were difficult, were really difficult.
Yeah.
I bootstrapped. I didn't have much funds. I couldn't afford a big office. But then, thankfully, I had a good market. I mean, there was a lot of, you know, our prime minister promotes yoga as well.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people know about yoga in India now, and a lot of people caught on to it. And I have 250 running customers.
Mm-hmm.
That's for at-home yoga. I have 4 studios running in Kolkata,
mm-hmm.
and it's going well.
So let's go back to those 3 months then. What challenges did you have to overcome then? Obviously, money, anything else?
Yeah, funds, of course. Yeah. But then getting a team was difficult. So I had a few people who worked with me previously and were more than happy to start this with me. However, getting the yoga trainers into this idea was difficult. They were not familiar with the idea of working for a company that would send them to a customer's house.
Okay.
They were actually looking for jobs where they would come into a studio, spend the day over there, and get paid for that. That was difficult. So we had to reach out to a lot of institutions, a lot of colleges, a lot of young people who are into fitness, who are into football, and get them into this idea. We had to train them on yoga, actually, get them certified, pay for that, and then make them trainers. And that was difficult.
Let's talk about yoga then. Why yoga then? What's your interest in yoga? Have you always been interested in yoga then?
Honestly speaking, Neil, I have never been interested in yoga. I just thought it was a good idea and a good business. Even right now, I've got a really strong team that deals with it. Mm. But very, very recently, I would say. My wife and me just had a baby a little while ago, and yoga helped us a lot. Everything went smooth because of yoga for my wife. Post-pregnancy, which is postnatal yoga, is helping her a lot, getting her back into shape. And why not? I mean, gym is such a stereotype right now, if I could say. Just hitting a gym or lifting up weights at home. When yoga actually focuses on your core, it's helping you a lot more inside than just building up a big body. It's helping your mind. It's helping you de-stress, and yoga is really good.
What plans do you have for the future then?
We definitely want to move to other cities too. We're discussing that right now. But what I really want is we're looking at least 500 customers in the next 3 months. We're looking at setting up more studios so that people who cannot afford to have a yoga trainer at home could just have a studio around in the area and step in over there. So more customers definitely get me more money. That's needed right now, and more studios. That's our plan.
Okay. And how are you attracting customers then? Is it mainly online or offline?
Yes. Yeah, we use Facebook mostly.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot of paintings done on walls around the entire Kolkata. That's actually got me a lot of customers. People call us in every day, saying we just saw a painting of your company on the wall, write up about you on the wall.
Are you allowed to do that?
yes, we are. So it's actually personal owned buildings.
Okay.
We just yeah.
Right. Not someone else's building.
No way, couldn't do that.
Where did you get the idea for that then?
That's a common. That's normal in Kolkata.
Right.
You walk around the entire Kolkata, you just see paintings on walls. Everyone's advertising on walls instead of having hoardings.
Okay. Well, a lot cheaper, is it?
Really? Extreme. It just cost me to paint. That's
it. Yeah. Okay. So what are these paintings of then? Just advertising your services?
Just advertising. It's just got our services listed. We don't have our pricings mentioned over there at all. We don't, except for the website, we don't mention our pricing anywhere, whether it be pamphlets or Facebook. We don't want that. We want customers to call us in and inquire, and that's when we let them know.
So what is the pricing strategy then? And how did you come with those prices?
So a minimum yoga at home package would cost you 4,000 rupees, and that would give you 12 sessions a month. So that's you choose an alternate day package, either a Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, or a Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. We came up with this pricing because we've got to pay. So these trainers have already been earning a particular amount of money. And keeping that payment in mind, keeping my office cost in mind, I needed to make a little money, and that's the bare minimum that we just kept. We came up to 4,000. We're not making a lot of money on this right now, but we are at studios. You'd get a studio session 1 hour a day for just 1,800 rupees a month.
Yeah.
Or 1,500 in some studios, 2,000 in some studios. And that's where I make a lot of money, because each batch has at least 15 to 20 customers. So,
is that what you expected when you started your business, that you would get these type of numbers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because when I did the same thing 4 years ago with another company, it was clear. It was clear. People suddenly realize what yoga is. It's not a push sale anymore, Neil. I get people calling us at least 15 calls a day asking us for our services.
Okay.
So Urban Club is great as well. I'm sure you're aware of Urban Club. So that's where we get most of our leads from.
So obviously there's a lot of like yoga online and apps as well.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that then? Because obviously they're sort of in competition with what you're doing, right? Or not? Or
we also have a few customers in Australia. We had them in Kolkata and they shifted. They were pretty disappointed that they're going to miss us. But then we pulled off a Skype session with them. And they liked it, and they're paying us the same amount that they would pay over here for at home classes, and we're conducting that. So yeah, I think we're looking at. I am definitely looking for a round of funding right now, and I would really want to invest in an app for online sessions, an app for bookings. We just have our website right now, and these apps are good. So,
in terms of yoga, then how long does it take to learn yoga then?
Forever, if I could say that. Yeah, because you never actually completely learn yoga. You keep practicing, and as you go, you keep learning. Now, for a customer, when there's someone new at yoga, we in fact suggest them not to go for a 5-day package, but to go for a 3-day package, to take it really slow for the first couple of months.
Yeah.
And then once they're used to it, if they want to, scale up to a 5-day package. And most of my customers are not actually coming on board to learn yoga. They come on board for 70% weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is either general fitness or a few of them have medical issues.
Mm-hmm.
Diabetes, stress, and none are to actually. But the freshers that I get on board, before I send them actually for a certification, we train them for 2 months over here.
Mm-hmm.
And I shouldn't be saying this, and I don't do it, but if I do not even send them for a certification and send them after a 2-month training to a customer's house, that customer is not going to know.
Mm-hmm.
That's how soon you could pick it up.
Okay. And who are you actually targeting then?
Okay. Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been doing any targeted marketing. None. Just random adverts everywhere. I couldn't actually target anyone in yoga. I could get a 18-year-old who's into football and would like to stay fit. And as I said, it's not only yoga, it's physiotherapy too that we provide. So we get 18 to 20-year-olds who just want to stay fit and do something that's new. Just for the sake of putting it up on Facebook and saying, hey, I'm doing yoga.
Okay. Yeah.
And we get homemakers, ladies who just want to stay active, lose weight, stay fit. And we get a lot of businessmen too who are very stressed. And yoga helps. So nothing particular to be targeted, just everyone.
Everyone, that's good. What's your most popular class then? Is a specific time and day where you get the most of the students then?
Oh, tell me about this. This is one problem that I face.
Yeah.
Now, everyone wants to practice yoga in between 6 in the morning to 9 in the morning.
Oh, okay.
Now I strongly believe it's just a myth that you're supposed to do yoga early in the morning. You could do it any time of the day. You could do it at office too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But a lot of people just want to practice between either the 6 to 7 slot or the 7:30 to 8:30 slot or the 9 to 10 slot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm getting so much demand during this time and all my trainers are stacked up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having to get more trainers on board. They're getting filled with the 6 a.m. or 9 a.m. slots very quick, but then they're resting the entire day.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Their next class is probably in the evening, so that's where I'm not making money.
Mm. Well, what about hot yoga? That seems to be trending at the moment. Is that something you do?
No, we don't. And it's not something that's trending in Kolkata yet.
No.
It's just mainly general fitness over here. No, in fact, none. Since the time I've started, I haven't got a single request for hot yoga.
Okay. And how will you expand your business then? You said you wanted to go to different cities. What's the roadmap for that?
So we're looking at Mumbai first. and we're looking at Mumbai the next 3 months. The discussion we were having is we're looking at a few of the people who were part of the core team here shifting for the first couple of months, setting up a team there and then moving back. Of course, I would like to be there myself for the first month. Then Delhi and Bangalore.
It seems everything's going well. Anything yes. that you worry about? Anything that keeps you up at night, perhaps?
What we spoke about a couple of minutes ago, the slots, us just getting packed early in the morning and then nothing to do during the day. We've tried to work out a lot of plans where we throw out a huge discounts for an afternoon slot or an early evening slot, but it doesn't seem to work. That's a worry because we spend a lot of money on these trainers every month. And if I don't start earning money the rest of the day, it's going to be an issue.
So this is like your second attempt then?
Yes.
What did you learn from your first attempt?
Honestly, the first attempt was absolutely fine. It was perfect. I saw the numbers. I was backed by a founder who was who had a lot of money, if I could just say it directly. So he wasn't worrying about the cost. And everything was fine. We could market well. We were marketing on Facebook, Just Dial, everywhere. And that's how the customers were coming in. The problem started when I started the Kolkata Yoga Club with lack of funds. And there's just so much struggle in a startup. I mean, it's such a fun thing when you're a founder, when you're a CEO, you have virtually no one to report to. And it might seem like a very good thing, a great thing, but it's not. You've got to transition very quickly from your founder's role into becoming the CEO or the COO and running the show. And unless you do that, your business is going to fail. So it was a lot of hard work and ground level work that you got to do yourself that I had to do.
What would you say is your management style like then? How has it changed over the years?
It hasn't. Honestly, it hasn't. I've always been pretty cool at work. I'm in shorts right now, and so is the rest of my team, being it a Saturday. But they could do that on a Monday too, and I wouldn't have a problem. So I kind of let these people be themselves. If I put someone at a role, they've got to manage that role and take care of it. I don't want to be micromanaging, and I hate that. I don't like to be micromanaged, and I wouldn't want to do that with someone else. And that's how I run the show, and it's been awesome.
Last few questions then. You know, for those people who basically sit at their desks all day, what kind of poses would you recommend, and any types of yoga tips?
There is desk yoga, and we've been doing that for a lot of corporates in Calcutta. We've got just a couple of days ago on the 21st, the International Yoga Day, we visited about 16. I think it was 16 corporates, and they were corporates with employee strength of around 500. So different floors, so many trainers walking around. We taught them poses to do at regular intervals at work to avoid neck issues, back issues. We taught them things to do for people who already have those issues. And now these corporates are calling us back for regular sessions, so twice a week. So there is desk yoga, and I believe everyone who sits at a desk at a desk job 8 hours should be doing that.
And in terms of physiotherapy, then what's been like the most common ailment? What do people most moan about?
See, physiotherapy is a completely different ballgame from yoga. I don't market physiotherapy. I don't advertise it. I don't do anything. Physiotherapy is prescribed by doctors here in India for any issue. You've got to see a physiotherapist. You've got to take at least 10 sessions from them, and that's the calls we get. We don't get return customers for physiotherapy. There are no renewals. Their packages are for 5 sessions, or 6 sessions, or 10 sessions, and once it's done, they're gone. We try and convert them to yoga customers to keep them well. We heal them, but I would say just about 30 or 40% of that works out.
Do you do any of those laughter classes?
Yeah, it's just 5 minutes. So when we do a corporate session, we do it at our office too. We do a mix of desk yoga, we do super brain yoga, and we do laughter classes. It's just laughing.
Okay.
There's nothing much to it. We follow a lot of practices over here where people try and bend down while they're laughing with their hands down, and then just throwing their hands up in the air when they do that. You don't have to do that, actually. You could be lying down, you could be sitting on your chair and just laugh to relieve stress. It's nothing much more than stress relief, and it actually helps with a little breathing as well.
Mm-hmm. Is that quite popular?
Yes.
Why do you
90% of our corporates
want that. Why do you think that is then?
Honestly speaking, most of our corporates just ask for that to lighten up mood, not knowing the benefit. Whenever they ask us for a desk yoga session or a corporate yoga session, they're like, can you guys throw in a little bit of a laughter session too? Just so everyone laughs and they're all happy. You know, that's why they ask for it.
You mentioned super brain yoga. What's that?
Yeah. It's a series of postures that you do to improve your focus.
Oh, okay.
And it just takes you about 30 seconds, but you do it twice. So it's done within a minute. It's usually done at corporate sessions, and it's really good to do it at home. You can get these videos anywhere. It improves your focus a lot. Mm-hmm.
Super brain yoga. Okay.
Super brain yoga. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Last few questions then. How big do you actually want to go with this then? This seems to be going quite well.
So I'm not a guy with big dreams. I do not want to start many other businesses. I just want to stick to this, and our plan with this is really big. So we've just spoken to a couple of people who are going to be helping us with forming an institution, a foundation actually, yeah, where we're going to become a body that could actually certify trainers as well. Mm-hmm. So the plan is not only this business, but to also start an institution where young people could just step in, get trained, certification courses for 6 months, and we charge for that. Mm-hmm. That's where we want to take this and go. And that would probably be much, much bigger than what the Kolkata Yoga Club is right now. Mm-hmm. That itself as a separate entity is going to be bigger than this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Do you have any like heroes, any people that you look up to, any people you admire?
No. I love mixed martial arts, and just off the last 3 or 4 years, I really like this guy Conor McGregor. I look up to him a lot. I mean, I'm not sure how many people would know of him, but I really like the way he does things and goes about his life. But so I follow him a lot and like him a lot.
Okay, cool. That's the end of the show. If you liked it, please leave a rating or review of the show. Just search for The Indo Startup Show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Acast, Loomery, and Castbox. If you're building something exciting, please send me an email, hello@neilpatel.co, or tweet at Indian Startup SH, or go to facebook.com/Indian Startup Show. Love to connect. Thank you and goodbye.